We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game.
It may be the nighttime,
but the sports talk doesn't stop.
Sports talk radio that's live, local,
and not for the faint of heart.
Oh, you did? No!
Sometimes angry.
Loud noises!
Telling it like it is.
You insulted him a little bit. You got a little out of order yourself.
And pretty much always right.
Don't ever argue with the big dog. Big dog is always right.
Text or call 404-741-0929 and be part of the show.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Kia Studios, it's time for the John Chuckery Show. Serving you up sports on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
And welcome in on a Thursday night on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the John Chuckery Show. Coming to you live here from, as we've been saying all week now, from parts unknown. Hanging out with you for the full 4 to 11 o'clock tonight. Don't forget the radio.com app is where you always catch us live and on the go. We know it's a lot of changing times, so download that app to be able to hear us on any device, your smart speakers, smartphones, whatever that you've got, you can listen to us on. Follow the station at social media. It's all at 929 The Game, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You can follow us on all those different platforms. The best way to be a part of our show is through our personal Twitter handles. I am at JMCH316. At JMCH316, that is all your water cooler talking points 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. He is behind the glass producing the show tonight. Jarvis is in the building, still hanging out in Midtown at JarvisD90, at JarvisD90. Jarvis, you can bring that feedback down just a little bit, would be great. Lots to get into with you tonight. Of course, we had the night off last night, but back at it tonight. So lots of information about MLB and kind of maybe where they're potentially headed. Always plenty of Falcons news to get into, and some very interesting numbers that are coming out from the NCAA via Moody's credit line and also some of the payout information. So lots to get into with you tonight. I do want to say as well, and I tweeted this out a little bit earlier tonight, that tomorrow night we've got a really busy show, and I don't want to take away from anything tonight, but I definitely want you to get ready for tomorrow night, because at 7:40 tomorrow night we will have good old JR, Jim Ross, the voice of wrestling. He will be joining us as his new book, which is kind of the part two. His first book was Slobber Knocker, that detailed a lot of his early part of his wrestling career and takes you kind of pre-Attitude Era. This new book, Under the Black Hat, which you can pre-order on Amazon, it'll be out, I believe it's the 31st of March that it comes out. You can pre-order that on Amazon, but this will take you basically from the Attitude Era all the way through to what's happened in the last few years, including really the tragic loss of his wife, who was in a car wreck and died, two or three years ago, that she was killed in a car wreck. So very emotional story for Jim. We will talk to him. We'll spend some time with him tomorrow. Sophia Choi from WSB is joining us as well, so it'll be a loaded show, but plenty to get into tonight on what is a bittersweet night. Of course, we don't have any Major League Baseball, which yesterday was supposed to be officially opening day for the new Major League Baseball season. And, of course, here locally, so much hype, so much to be excited about through the summertime with this Atlanta Braves team. We've talked about all offseason about how, you know, the Braves right now, even with all the moves that everybody's made and this, that, and the other, Braves still looked at it was the second highest win total in the National League and Vegas betting odds, only the L.A. Dodgers. And, of course, their loaded roster, having gotten Mookie Betts here toward the end of winter before training camps opened. They're the only team that is projected to win more regular season games than what the Braves are. And, of course, after two failed disappointing runs in the playoffs, especially this past season against the Cardinals, what was a disaster of a finale in that Game 5. So lots of hype and hoopla and bittersweet about the fact that we get baseball, obviously, at some point. We're going to talk about that more at 7:40. But there's just something about as spring starts and we get close to April about having Major League Baseball there. I go back to one of my favorite times in baseball, and everybody knows I'm a baseball junkie. College football and baseball are my two big loves out there. So I go back to, I remember in April of 1991, and I was still in the middle of my, that would have been my first year of college at Akron U. And I will say that I didn't take college nearly seriously enough as I should have. I just didn't enjoy as much work as what it was at times. But I remember we laid out of classes for the Cleveland Indians opening day. Now, Akron, a little bit further north than where I grew up from in Canton, so it was even a shorter drive. I mean, you could beat up to Cleveland Municipal Stadium in about 40 minutes from Akron, I should say. So it wasn't hard to get out there. So the Indians, I remember, opened up. It was early, mid-April game. A lot of times the Indians in those years, they always played out in the West Coast to start with, played in the warmer climates because it was so to play in Cleveland. I remember opening day, it wasn't great. It didn't rain or anything like that, but it wasn't sunny. It wasn't blue skies, but it was baseball. You know, the Indians took on the Texas Rangers, and one of the things I remember and part of why we wanted to go up there was, yeah, it was opening day. You could get tickets really cheap. That's back when they still played in Cleveland Municipal Stadium. There was no Jacobs Field or anything like that yet. They weren't in Jacobs Field yet at that time. They weren't, you know, what we know as that great Indians team that made the run through the 90s. They had Baerga, they had Albert Bell, he was up on the team, Sandy Alomar, but a lot of those guys that you became familiar with over the years, no Manny, no Tomy, no Omar Vizquel, those guys weren't all up in there yet. But I remember taking on the Texas Rangers, and kind of one of the big highlights for me was the fact that one of my favorite players all time growing up, and a guy that we know here in Atlanta, Julio Franco, was now with the Texas Rangers, and playing second base for them. And, you know, you think about how many years later before he actually came to the Braves, how long Julio Franco played in Major League Baseball and played for the Indians. I'm trying to remember. I think he was part of the Vaughn Hayes trade. I'm trying to remember. He was part of one of those trades that brought him over in one of those trades for Vaughn Hayes or one of those guys that the Indians were always trading away, you know, in those mid-late 80s years when they were no good and always giving up on their best young players and things like that. You know, even giving up on Joe Carter before they made that big run with all the guys they drafted. And that was really how they got back into greatness, was all the guys that came up through their minor league system. Traded for Kenny Lofton, you know, obviously Albert, Manny, all those guys. Baerga brought them. You know, Baerga actually came through a trade with the Joe Carter trade with Sandy Alomar. So, but they were able to develop those guys through their minor league system. But I just remember being there, you know, that was a big football stadium that the Indians played in. It wasn't a baseball stadium. It never was a great baseball stadium to watch games in. Truthfully, by that time, it was a dump. It was already bad enough for Browns games with the, you know, when they had the dog pound there and all that kind of stuff there. But it was already a dump by the time 91 had rolled along, and it wouldn't be very much longer before the Indians would be playing in Jacobs Field, a beautiful stadium. Went there a few times. It was a great stadium for them. I think it's called Progressive Field or something, but it's always going to be Jacobs Field. That's what their mama named it. That's what I'm going to name it. But just those memories of opening day, how fun they were, and I think everybody has an opening day story, right? And lots of great opening day memories. You know, for instance, not too long ago, Jason Hayward makes his debut, homers in his first game. Remember the Jeff Francoeur debut? I mean, just opening day has a lot of memories. And for whatever reason, it seems to, from an emotional standpoint, have more significance than even when college football or NFL or, you know, MLS or NBA open up. I don't even know if anybody, does anybody actually have an NBA opening day memory? The only thing I remember about NBA opening day is that it comes way too early. Short of that, there are no opening day NBA memories. But Major League Baseball is one of those things that has been so ingrained that it becomes such a big deal. And, of course, the Reds for so many decades, you know, they always played the first game to start the Major League season. There's been years where, what, I think they played games in Australia. I think they played games in Japan. You know, they've done some weird things over the years about how they've tweaked opening day. But there's just something about the emotional connection of Major League Baseball and opening day that we're obviously missing out on this year. You know, and as MLB and the Players Union try to come up with the solution for what to do this season, when can they start playing, will people be there, and things like that, you know, there's a good chance that when we finally do get baseball back, that you won't have fans that will be in the stadium. It will be the guys playing by themselves in empty stadiums. And that's been done before, a few years ago in Baltimore at the Camden Yards. I think it was the White Sox and Orioles that played a game because of all the issues that they had with some of the riots and things going on in Baltimore, that they had to play an empty stadium game. It was like a midweek afternoon game that they closed off to everybody, and nobody was allowed in, so the two teams just played, and I think they had the announced teams and things like that. So, you know, that may be the reality of how you get baseball back faster, is you at least get the players and the teams on the field, but maybe there's no fans in the stands. Either way, we're not going to get that, you know, opening day emotion and just the idea of baseball's back and it's springtime. You know, obviously baseball kind of the signal for spring. So we're just not going to get all of that, you know, passion and just those memories that folks make on there. So hopefully it won't be long before we, you know, we start to get back to some on-field action. I still think we're probably, you know, as we discussed a little bit last night, or not last night, but Tuesday night, you know, probably another month and a half away. You know, probably nothing probably before Memorial Day. Maybe NASCAR comes back. Maybe MLS decides to try to get things cranked back up. But I think Memorial Day before, you know, when you look at the CDC recommendations about bringing people together and things like that, and I do believe that it will start off with no fans, and eventually as things kind of start to level off, then we'll start to get people in arenas and in Major League Baseball stadiums and racetracks and things like that. The NBA, I don't know what they're going to do. They're talking about changing drafts and maybe not having a draft for a while. And, you know, we've said before that it's weird how the free agent period comes after the draft and things like that. I mean, just it's kind of reversed the way the NFL does it, where they get free agency and then a draft. So I don't know. Maybe this spurs on some more changes for the NBA. But, I mean, it's almost a blessing in disguise in some ways for the NBA, because without having the Olympics, these guys are, you know, not tied into having to try to squeeze a season in and get that competition in as well. So lots to get into with you here tonight. When we get back, is it Ridley time for the Falcons? Numbers are starting to point upward. I'll give you those, and we'll talk about that next. John Checker here, hanging out with you live on a Thursday night. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, and on the Radio.com app. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Welcome back to the John Chuckery Show. Hanging out with you here on a Thursday night. 404-741-0929. That's the phone line. That is also our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Be sure to download the radio.com app. Put that on whatever device that you got, you know, like one of your smartphones, smart speakers, your boombox CD player, Walkman, Laserdisc, Texas Instruments calculator. I don't know, whatever you got for a device, download it, because that's your way to catch us on the go. All the social media for the station is at 929 The Game. Give us a follow on Twitter. I'm at JMCH316, at JMCH316. He's at JarvisD90. So as we've been talking about the Atlanta Falcons and the fact that they have shown that they are ready to load up and get back to 2016 offensive prowess, and hopefully Dirk Cutter can find some of that magic the way that Kyle Shanahan did that year. But we know it certainly won't be for a lack of personnel. You know, with all the additions, with Gurley being added in, obviously Hayden Hurst, the new tight end, Laquon Treadwell. Obviously, we've talked a lot about the rookie offensive linemen, and, you know, it was by and large in some ways a lost season last year, certainly for Chris Lindstrom more than McGarry. But, you know, even Caleb McGarry, who didn't get a chance to go through training camp and things like that and had to kind of figure out things on the fly, and then Lindstrom only plays really the last four games of the year at any sort of health. So, you know, a lot of chatter about what those guys are going to be coming into this year. But one guy, when you start to look at the numbers, that has the potential for that really big breakout season is Calvin Ridley. Now, let me give you some numbers last year. Of course, Ridley played 13 games last year, and even in that 13th game against the Carolina Panthers, he had suffered an abdominal injury and was out the rest of that game and then missed, obviously, the rest of the season. So he missed the final three games plus part of the Carolina game. But if you look at his numbers before and after the Mohamed Sanu trade, and we talked a lot about this last fall, about just it looked like Ridley had kind of embraced the chance and the opportunity to be a bigger piece and a bigger role and put that star on his chest as one of the top performers that this team has. So in the first seven games where you have Mohamed Sanu, he averaged 6.29 targets from Matt Ryan, 29 catches for 373 yards. That's a 12.86 yards per reception number, averaging 53.29 yards per game. Now, one game that the offense really didn't do anything and the numbers were really bad was that Indianapolis game, okay? So, you know, over the course of the season, you're going to have some good ones, have some bad ones. That just kind of comes along with the territory. But when you look at the final six games that he played in, which includes, by the way, part of a game that he didn't play in because in that sixth game against Carolina, he was hurt during the game and didn't finish out the entire game. And then, of course, didn't get to play the final three games of the year. But he went from 6.29 up to 8.17 targets, so almost two targets per game more. He had 34 catches to 29. And by the way, remember now, this is one less game played. Actually, let's say a game and a half or so, okay, you know, before what he had played in the first part of the season. So he went from 29 catches in the first seven games, 34 in the final six games. His yardage went from 493 from the 373. His yards per reception went up to 14.5 yards per catch. Now, that's a stout number in the NFL. Sorry. You've got a guy that averages almost 15 yards a reception. That's a big-time number. You know, guys in college get into that sometimes 18 to 20 because nobody can cover those guys. But you get 15 yards a reception in the NFL, that's getting some work done. And by the way, you didn't have any sort of great third wide receiver that took things over. I mean, Russell Gage, a nice piece. Who was that guy, Jarvis, number 14? What was his name again? I forget. It's been so long since he's been here and done anything. I can't remember what his name is. But you didn't. Oh, Hardy. That's right. He was one of the Hardy boys. That's right. So you had nobody that really took the pressure off of those two guys. And I'm talking about from a wide receiver standpoint. You know, I know Austin Hooper had a really nice year, but it didn't slow Ridley down. By the way, 82.2 yards per game. So almost 19 yards per game. Sorry, almost 29 yards per game more once Mohamed Sanu left. And if you look at the overall season numbers, in 13 games played and 10 starts, he had only one less reception than he did his rookie year. He had 45 more yards total than he did his rookie year. He averaged almost a yard per reception more. He went from 12.8 to 13.7. Touchdowns were down a little bit, 10 versus 7. That's, we kind of expected maybe a little bit of a drop, but it wouldn't have been unrealistic to think he couldn't have been 8 or 9 or close to 10. Maybe got 10 touchdown receptions when all was said and done last year. I think with all the chatter about what Gurley's going to mean, the ability for Hurst, because even if Hayden Hurst gets somewhat close to Austin Hooper, okay, and I'm not sure Hayden Hurst is a 70-plus reception tight end. Maybe he is. It's not a matter of talent, but just maybe he is or maybe he is not that guy. But I think you watch the transformation of a Calvin Ridley getting his opportunity to really shine as that full-time number two wide receiver on the opposite side of Julio. And look, he may benefit even from a Laquon Treadwell, who we know is a guy that maybe should be faster and better than what he is, but maybe he also actually kind of helps open up one side of the field or really helps open up things for Ridley as well. We know 11's going to get those two guys put on him. That doesn't matter who's on the other side of the field. As long as you've got 11 standing over there, two guys are coming over there to meet up with him and take him on. So if you want to look for guys who are really ready to take that next step up, and if we're talking about this offense getting back into 2016 types of levels, you know, would it be unrealistic to think that Calvin Ridley couldn't be 1,200 yards and 8 to 10 touchdowns? And we know Julio is going to go for his 1,300 to 1,500 yards, maybe 6 to 8 touchdowns himself. You know, I think that Hayden Hurst is a guy who maybe 55, 60 catches, maybe a little bit more, okay? But, I mean, if he's in that 55 to 60 catch range, can be 600 yards, he can be maybe 5 touchdowns. You know, there's plenty of room for Calvin Ridley to really explode in this offense. Now, I think Laquon Treadwell is a very interesting case because he's better than what you could have with Taylor Gabriel. Maybe he hasn't played up to some of the things that Gabriel has done at times, but when you look at his size and speed and physicality, and I hate to say, you know, you keep looking at that guy at Ole Miss, and you keep saying to yourself, you know, where's that guy at? And he had two really good wide receivers around him, obviously, you know, in Thielen and Stephon Diggs in Minnesota. He had two guys that were high caliber, you know, big time, 1,000-plus yard wide receivers, and he really got lost in the shuffle. You know, I don't know if he is a more than 35-catch wide receiver on this team or in this offense, but maybe he doesn't have to be. You know, if Matt Ryan can stay upright and get protected and they can run the ball in short yardage situations and they can be effective in the run game to where first down play action opens itself up and they can take some shots at Julio and Ridley, Calvin Ridley may be one of the guys that we're really looking at and talking about having that big step upward. And, you know, I haven't seen rankings yet because, you know, they probably haven't gotten quite into, we're not quite into summertime before camp and after the draft and things like that. But when you talk about wide receiver duos in the NFL, and of course Diggs is no longer in Minnesota, so that twosome has been broken up. But when you talk about wide receiver duos in the NFL, there's no reason why Calvin and Julio can't be the best. And you see that after Mohamed Sanu left this team, that even though there wasn't a great other option besides Ridley and Julio to take some pressure off, because I think Mohamed Sanu was a more valuable piece than maybe some people want to give him credit for. I think he was both a locker room leader. I think he was an on-field leader. I think he was a guy who would do a lot of things. I think he was a great safety valve at times for Matt. And it's not a matter of he put up great numbers, but I think he was one of those guys that on the field was respected by defenses of how good he was, his catch percentage, and some of those other metrics that guys like to get into on those dopey sabermetric things that football websites get into. But after Sanu left, and it gave Ridley the chance to kind of shine his star to be that true, legitimate number two wide receiver, you know, based on the numbers that I gave you, everything went up. Catches, yards, yards per reception. Matt obviously targeted him more. And again, that is with Devontae Freeman. That is with Austin Hooper on the field. So it's not like those guys weren't playing as well, and then Ridley was just given, you know, it was only Ridley and Julio, and that was the only offensive options that they had out there. They still had those other guys that were in play and in the mix. And think about it. We know how many times Matt was hit. Like, I think the stat was 4,926 times last year that Matt was hit in only 15 games because he missed a game because he got hit 219 times in one game. I'm being facetious with these numbers, but you understand my point, is that he got his brains beat in again last year. He's gone back-to-back years of getting his brains beat in as the quarterback of this team. So you want to put your eyes on a guy that maybe takes that next big step forward and a guy who maybe has, you know, his real kind of breakout year. Maybe he's a Pro Bowl player as well. No reason to think that based upon what we saw in the last six games of last season that Calvin Ridley can't be that guy. And he'll be exciting to see. I don't know that the Falcons are drafting another wide receiver. I think they have four pretty competent wide receivers now. unless there's somebody specifically for special teams play that they want. But short of that, I think they have four competent wide receivers. I think they have a nice group with, you know, Treadwell and Gage on the back end and whatever they can give you. You know, I don't even know what to project out of a Laquon Treadwell. I don't know if he's that guy more like Ole Miss and plays in a great system with the Falcons and flourishes, or if he's that guy in Minnesota that just, for whatever reason, just kind of gets lost in the shuffle. That other guys leap up ahead of him and take that next step in front of him. But I'm excited to see what Calvin Ridley can do. Truthfully, I'm excited to get the draft going. Believe it or not, we're moving very quickly toward the NFL draft, less than a month away. And by all indications, it's going to be all systems go. There hasn't been talk about trying to move it. I mean, some people have rumored and speculated about trying to move the draft, but there's been no real official word from the league office or the commissioner himself about this is not a realistic scenario. Look, it doesn't matter to have anybody there, as we've said. I mean, you don't need anybody there. You don't need the players there. I mean, with all due respect, I get the pomp and circumstance, and we're going to have it in Vegas and all that kind of stuff. But you can have it the way that they had it in 1983, where Pete Rozelle is sitting at a folding card table, and guys are handing up their picks, okay? Well, even if you don't have those guys in the building, okay? Like I said, you can have some 8-year-old kid walk the thing up to Roger Goodell and just let him make the picks. It's all people care about is, you know, the trades, who's up, who's going, who didn't do what. Okay, they don't necessarily, I mean, yeah, the stories are nice and things like that. And, you know, we got our moment here with Tack McKinley, find me later, or whatever it was. How about sack the quarterback later? Because that's kind of what he's played like, is sack the quarterback later, like years down the road or something like that. But anyway, look forward to Calvin Ridley and what he will do this season. All right, when we get back, let's talk some Major League Baseball, some of the proposals that are out there. And do we really need 162 games? Is it really important to squeeze as many games as possible into a really short amount of time? We'll discuss all of that next. We'll hear from Rob Manfred as well. It's the John Chuckwa Show, hanging out with you tonight from Parts Unknown to 11 o'clock. Sports Radio 99 The Game, and catch us on that radio.com app. 404-741-0929 is the phone line. That is also the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to interact. I do officially now have the text line up and running, and I got a texter already talking about his stock that has gone up. We'll talk about that in That's Life, as it was another good day for Wall Street. If you invested, man, it's getting back on track a little bit here and there. What's not quite on track yet is Major League Baseball. And, you know, there's a lot of rumor and innuendo going around about what the proposals are going to be. And there's some sticking points. One is the June draft, which probably would have to be put back quite a bit. Also, too, is time of service. And what that means is, do guys have to accrue a certain amount of days during the season? If the season got canceled, would it count toward another year? Why is this important? Because guys like Mookie Betts, JT Realmuto, George Springer, you know, if those guys don't get a year of service this year, if the season is canceled, then they have to wait a whole nother year to become free agents. You know, obviously Mookie Betts, former AL MVP, a guy the, you know, Braves weren't looking at, but anyway, he has one last season, and this would be a walk year with the Dodgers. And then, of course, he looks to become a free agent and cash in. Of course, the Dodgers picked him up through trade because, you know, the Braves weren't really interested in all that. But anyway, back to my original point, that guys like Mookie Betts are trying to see what the agreement is going to be between the two sides, because that is a huge thing. You know, you don't want to have to wait an extra year to get to free agency if you don't want. Also, too, is the schedule, and will guys basically get a reduced amount of money, a prorated salary, given what the season is. Now, one thing that both sides are talking about is the idea of trying to play as many games as they possibly can. Let's let you hear from Rob Manfred. Jarvis, I believe, is this from Scott Van Pelt's interview on SportsCenter last night that he did this? Okay. Let's let you hear from Rob Manfred as he kind of gives his thoughts about what the outlook is for a season.
We need to have a regular season with a credible number of games. I think we should have a postseason format that focuses on providing the most possible entertaining product to our fans at a very, very difficult time in our history. And overall, I think our goal is to play as many baseball games as we possibly can, given the limitations associated with the public health concerns.
Now, the talk is that both sides want to squeeze in as many games as they possibly can. They want to play as close to 162 games as they can. As crazy as that may sound, there are things being talked about playing multiple doubleheaders during the week. And as we said, part of this is how the money's going to work out. You know, obviously players don't want to take less money if they don't have to. They don't want to take prorated salaries. They also, part of what Major League Baseball wants is, if the season is canceled, they don't want to be sued by the players. And that's also part of the negotiations as well. There is a $150 million, what I want to say, kind of like stimulus payment that they have some money set aside to be able to pay some salaries to guys, obviously the minor leaguers. So there's a lot of details to work out. But the big thing that they want to do is play the most amount of games they can, even if that means playing postseason baseball headed into November, maybe even close to December. Okay. My question is this: why do we need 162 games? And as much as I love opening day and I love baseball and things like that, the idea of trying to overload us, and this is not for the fans, by the way. Okay, we all understand that, right? That the reason Major League Baseball and the Players Union are trying to determine games isn't about, hey, what's the best thing for the fans? What would be the best fan experience? How can we give the fans the most bang for their buck, or the most amount of exposure, or, you know, promised games, or whatever. I don't know, whatever term you want to put it. This has nothing to do with what they want for the fans. This is about their money. This is about how do we get our money from TV deals, from networks. The players want from the team. They want their full salaries. They don't want to have to give. Now, obviously, they've negotiated a lot of days off. That's part of what the agreement is between the Players Union and Major League Baseball. But I don't understand the reason to have 162 games. We all, as fans, we understand what and why and how it's going on. I don't think there's a problem if you even said maybe they get down to 100, 120 games. That still would make for a pretty good season. You know, in the strike-shortened season, I should say, really, in 95, coming out of the strike-shortened season, they only played 144 games. Now, that was 18 less games, obviously, on the schedule. The plan would be probably they're going to miss a lot more than that, because now what is being speculated is that June is probably the earliest that you could get actual games going. That sometime in May, and Jeff Passan from ESPN talked about this, what's that show in the morning, Jarvis, Get Woke? Whatever that show is, that's had you know, more hosts than this night show at times. But they talked about the idea of it would be sometime in June before you get regular season baseball, because it does seem like everybody wants to have some kind of spring training starting in maybe early mid May, and at least a few weeks of spring training, and they'll still have expanded rosters and things like that because of pitcher's health and things like that, okay? But I don't need baseball to just try to squeeze in and overload me with games just for the sake of we need our money. I get everybody wants the almighty buck, right? I'm the first in line. I'm the biggest capitalist that there is. I'm the first in line. I'll raise my hand and say I want every dollar I can squeeze out of it, okay? But we also understand the reality. And it's not like baseball has a reason to cancel their season. You know, even if it starts in June, you could do 100, 120 games. You know, people talk about they don't look at the standings till Memorial Day, and that's usually what, about maybe a third of the season, maybe not quite a third of the season, somewhere in that range. You've played 2 months of baseball, so maybe about a third of the season. You know, it's okay if we only get two-thirds of a season or slightly less. Yeah, I think that they will try to squeeze in maybe 120 some odd games, whatever like that. But the idea of what they want You know, they want to miss as few games as possible. Do we need like a bunch of doubleheaders during the week? Do we need like three doubleheaders a week, you know, in a 7-day week to try to catch up on some games and things like that? I don't think so. I mean, I'm for baseball and I'm ready for it to begin and to be back and things like that. But at some point, doesn't that put a strain on pitchers and players if we're talking about this many games? I mean, it sounds good now, but start playing multiple doubleheader series in Atlanta, mid-July, 74,000 degrees outside, 19,000% humidity. How good at times will some of the quality of play be? And I'd like to see it where it's a little bit more of a sprint, because now you don't have, you know, worrying about innings limitations. How do we rest guys at the end of the year? You know, I like that idea of a sprint more than a marathon. And again, understand, 100, 120 games is still a marathon. I don't care what anybody tells you. That you play 120 games, that's still a ton of games. That's still a lot to squeeze in. There's still going to be doubleheaders and things like that probably to try to realistically even get in that many games for it. But this idea of how baseball and the players, they feel like they don't want to try to miss any regular season time. And I will say that I'm one of the guys, I'm not in favor of World Series in November to December. I'm not really in favor of playoff baseball, you know, as we get to Thanksgiving. I've got college football. I've got, you know, if we're talking about baseball getting toward Thanksgiving, you're talking about conferences are decided in college football. The NFL season is rolling. MLS is trying to get toward their big playoff push. It's unnatural just for the sake of saying we had it to try to squeeze all these games in and push the World Series back into Thanksgiving. I mean, is that something that fans are clamoring for? As much as fans want baseball to be back, do we really, when we sit here today and we analyze it honestly, as Thanksgiving is rolling around, do you want the World Series to kind of be wrapping up at that time? You know, when we've got all the big-time college football action going on, and MLS, like I said, getting into their playoffs. I mean, do we have to have baseball squeeze in? Me personally, no. It's hard enough to keep up with everything that goes on with the NFL and college football and all that kind of stuff at that time of year. Now we've got to try to figure out baseball and what's going on with the World Series. And by the way, let it be two vagabond types of teams. You know, let it be two teams that are not really exciting. No Dodgers, no Astros, no Red Sox, no Yankees, no Braves. You know, let it be another, like, Kansas City Royals, I don't know, St. Louis Cardinals or something like that type series. How excited are people going to be for the World Series in November? And I've got two franchises that are just, you know, not one of the blue bloods or don't really move the meter from an excitement level. Let it be like the Blue Jays and, I don't know, pick a National League team that's not really excited. The Mets. And I shouldn't say the Mets because that's New York, obviously. I mean, I'm not excited about the Mets. But find two teams like that. The Padres and the Blue Jays. Imagine if you had a World Series like that. What are you going to have, seven people watch it as you get to Thanksgiving? Just not my cup of tea. So, look, they're going to shove baseball down our throat. I'm ready for baseball. I'm ready for it to come back. But I also would like a more realistic and manageable schedule of baseball. Not let's see how many games we can squeeze in because everybody needs to make sure that they get their millions of dollars and don't lose out on anything. All right, when we come back at the top of the hour, a lot of schools in the world of you know, for college athletic programs are not going to see a whole lot of money coming in. What this may mean for you, for the programs, for some of these things, we'll talk about all that and give you some numbers next. It is the John Chuckery Show, coming to you live here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and on the Radio.com app.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices, anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.